through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right. Now, before we get to all the baseball we have for you guys today, that includes an hour of Wyman and Bob from 2 to 3 before you're thrown into the Mariners pregame. And we've got some day baseball first pitch coming up at, 4:05 p.m. Going to be opening a road series against the Baltimore Orioles. Lots of good stuff coming up. But we do have some NFL news to get to. So we're going to do NFL headlines in about 15 minutes. And before we do that, we're going to keep it Seahawks specific. In fact, draft specific with our Seahawks draft prospect profile. This one on UW defensive tackle Levi Onwuzurike.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
All right, Onwuzurike is from Allen, Texas, where he was a four-star recruit coming out of high school, and he committed to Washington over offers from Arizona State. Curtis, is there anything you want to shout out?
Well, he made the right call.
There you go. I always give you
anything
a moment.
Anything but ASU.
Anything to trash ASU. Baylor and Michigan, and he was on a ton of preseason award watch lists heading into 2020. But he ended up opting out of the 2020 season. So I understand what Seahawks fans are thinking here. Well, I want to know what kind of player. I mean, if you've been watching UW football, you got a good look at him. Congratulations. And you know this, but you didn't see his final season. You might still have some questions. You might want to know exactly what he's going to look like when he hits the league. So without seeing him this year, Jake Heaps has a profile on a player the Seahawks could take at 56 overall.
Now, today, guys, I want to address a position that not many are going to talk about and not many are really putting as a focus for the Seattle Seahawks, and that position is defensive tackle, and more specifically, the three technique position. We all know what happened between the Seahawks and Jaron Reed, and eventually you end up letting him go and go on to the Kansas City Chiefs in the open market. But that leaves a hole. Even though I think Puna Ford is going to step up and play that role at a high level, you need to have depth. Right now, you have depth at the one technique position. Brian Monet and Al Woods are your big pluggers. They are your one techniques, your gap fillers. And with your three technique position at defensive tackle, you want somebody to rotate in with Puna Ford that can keep him fresh, keep him healthy. One of the ideas is maybe you slide down LJ Collier. Maybe you slide down Rasheem Green and let them be versatile between three technique and five technique positions and roles. But I think in the draft, what you could do is you could bring in a player like Levi Onwuzurike out of the University of Washington to come in and rotate with Puna Ford. Now, Levi Onwuzurike is someone that I believe has a great chance of falling to the Seahawks later in the second round. Also could potentially even fall down to the third round in this draft. So if the Seahawks were able to trade back a little bit here, I still think that they would have a chance at Levi Onwuzurike. Now, at 6'3", 290 pounds, he isn't necessarily the prototypical size for the interior, but at that three-technique position, I think that he would fill that very adequately. The 40-yard dash, he earned himself some money, flashing some athleticism and strength. 40-yard dash, he ran a 4.85, and his bench press was 29 times. So the biggest thing that you see with Levi Onwuzurike and a lot of the conversation around him is he opted out due to COVID this last season, so there's not recent film on him. That, to me, is a big knock and a big reason why you might see Onwuzurike slide in this draft. He did participate in the Senior Bowl. He did well, but he wasn't a consistent, dominant performer, and that is what consistently has been talked about Onwuzurike. He is a flash prospect. He is a guy that has shown at times to be extremely dominant. He has shown at times to be a guy who's earned first-team All-Pac-12 honors his last year participating at UW, recording 45 tackles, 6 tackles for loss with 2 sacks and a blocked kick in 13 games, 12 starts. Onwuzurike is undersized for his position, but is very strong with his ability to anchor down in the run game against interior blockers. He's very physical. And as I said, flashes moments where he is able to control and overwhelm single blockers in the interior. He has an explosive first step and provides early momentum in the neutral zone. So neutral zone, for everybody out there, that's just really kind of a fancy word for in between the center and the guard, that neutral area, or within that six steps. You heard Ray Roberts talk about offensive linemen needing to win the six-inch battle at that initial contact, that initial phase and drive. On Zurique, because of his flashy first step and his quickness, he can beat the offensive line to win that six-inch battle, to get penetration in that neutral zone and do it at a very, very explosive way. But he failed to post really true high-end level production. Talking about 10-plus sacks, you know, nearing 10 sacks. So this is a guy that wasn't just absolutely flat-out dominant in the interior. There's things that you love about him. You love how strong he is. You love that he plays with a great motor and tenacity. But the other things that I think hold Levi Onwuzurike back is his inconsistency in production. And he's had games where he just flat out disappears. And that is the big concern with Levi Onwuzurike and his inconsistency with his pad level. So when you have guys that work the interior, you want to see them use their leverage, stay low, drive, and get underneath the pad level of offensive guards and centers to be able to be explosive and drive these guys back into the backfield. What Levi Onwuzurike would be in my mind and how he would fit here in Seattle is he would be a great rotational three technique player with Puna Ford on the interior. He'd be a guy that would be able to keep Puna Ford, his legs fresh, but Levi Onwuzurike could be a nice player to bring in to bring flash plays, tackles for loss, pass rush, and that is one thing that you're going to miss with Jaron Reed. Look, Puna Ford, his best season as a Seahawk yet, he got 9 quarterback hits, but he only had 2 sacks. Jaron Reed, yeah, he has shown over his career, he's been able to 10.5 sacks, 6 sacks over the last couple years. Those are numbers that you cannot turn your nose up at. That is production that will be missed. And I think Levi Onwuzurike could be a nice addition to help out Puna Ford to replace some of that pass rushing production that Jaron Reed would have brought to the table for the Seahawks if he remained on this roster. So Levi Onwuzurike, to me, is not necessarily a name that strikes as a can't-miss prospect if they decided to trade back. John Schneider in the front office decided to trade back. But I do believe that Levi Onwuzurike would be a nice selection at that spot, or maybe even into the third round if he was there, given a Seahawks trade back in this draft. So don't shy away from the idea of Levi Onwuzurike potentially staying in Seattle as a Husky and then moving on to the Seattle Seahawks.
That was Jake Heaps in his profile of UW defensive tackle Levi Onwuzurike, saying there's a chance he falls to Seattle at 56, and there's also a very slim chance, too, that Seattle could trade back and still manage to get him, because Onwuzurike sat out the 2020 season to prepare for the draft and forego his final year of college eligibility, which means that there could be some teams that aren't quite sure. Maybe they weren't watching a lot of UW games. Maybe they didn't love everything they saw on the tape. Whatever it is, it may have caused him to slide just a little bit. So seems a little more likely for the Seahawks as opposed to a guy that like might have to fall out of the first and some. Now, Bump, would you go DL? Because this is one of the position groups that I'm actually kind of shocked we haven't talked more about as far as the Seahawks taking a D lineman first. I think it's because of all the attention that's been paid to the offensive line with the conversation from Russell Wilson, but this could be a group that you've talked about potentially looking at first.
Yeah, I think they could go with that defensive line just because who do you have there? Right now you have Puna Ford, who you expect to continue to get better, which I think he is. You got Al Woods, who's a veteran. Backing up Puna, you have Rasheem Greens, and then you have Miles Adam, Brian Monet, Cedric Lattimore. It's all about depth when you talk about this defensive line. I've mentioned it before. The great thing about the D-line is these guys don't have to play every single snap. They can take 2 or 3 mm-hmm. plays off depending on the situation and rotate guys in. So there's more opportunity to mix things up as far as going against the offensive line. Now, when I look at this kid, 6'3", 288 pounds, like Jake said, he fires off the football. Like, his first step is ridiculous. I remember we played Auburn, and I'm a slot receiver watching their defensive line get off the line. It's comparable to that, and I'm not even gassing it up. He has quick feet, and he plays with good pad level, but he kind of does the same move every single time. So him not playing in 2020, I guarantee you there's some scouts that were looking forward to it. But like, look, what did he learn this offseason? Does he have another counter move? What else can he go to? I understand why he set out. because just the uncertainty, and then you mess with the pandemic. Everyone has their reasons, but I think it hurt him a bit. He was dialed up to have a really good year. I can see the Hawks picking him up. I think he'll be good taking on double teams. I think he needs to be a better pass rusher. He's a great run defender at this point. But if he's available late, take a look at him.
When you talk about having one move, is it more often than not guys have, like a defensive tackle has, maybe one, maybe two things he does, and it's only the elite guys that can fool you with others? Or is this something where it's like, you've got too much athleticism to have one move?
You know, some guys, Stace, just have one move just because they're so big and that's all they got. Yeah. I'm just going to overpower you. That's my game. But I look at him. I look at the way that he moves. I think he can add a move to his game. I think that he's had so much success at the college level just doing one or two things where he hasn't really had to do it. And that's the struggle with some college players, because the Pac-12 is not the NFL. You're going to go up across a guy who wasn't All-American, who was the best guy on his team in his area, in his state, and you got to mix things up. So but that's just being a young guy and evolving as a player.
From the 360, related to a question I was going to ask you, I don't really want to see the Hawks draft a running back, tight end, or defensive end, because they've drafted well at those positions for a while now, or, and I'll add this to the text, they've also added to those in free agency. I mean, you brought back Chris Carson and spent money on Chris Carson. Yep. A really team-friendly deal, but still, you brought in a trio of defensive ends, bringing back two guys, Dunlap and Benson Mayowa, who were with you, and adding Kerry Hyder Jr. Are you going to be okay? How are you feeling about this defensive line if they go into the season without adding someone there that could potentially be a starter, especially on the interior?
I feel okay. A guy that's not going to be a starter, because what does that mean? That means they're either drafting him high or they're going out and they're paying a bunch of money for a guy who's established. And we know that they just don't have the money for that. They just don't have the money and they don't have the draft pick. So it pretty much is what it is at this point. They'll bring some guys in to compete, but I'm all right with it. I think Puna deserves the chance. Every year he's gotten better. He just got his extension. Al Woods was serviceable before he got caught up with his issues. I think they're okay with the first four guys they have in the interior lineman rotation. After that, you bring guys in to compete.
Exactly. All right. That'll do it for our Seahawks draft prospect profile. This one on University of Washington defensive tackle Levi Onwuzurike. If you missed any of it, you can listen back. It kicks off hour three of the Jake and Stacey podcast. Jake on vacation, but going to keep us updated with some of those draft prospect profiles. All right. It is time for NFL headlines. Jadeveon Clowney, who I have long said would be a nice addition in Seattle on the cheap this time around. But no, he's going to take a second visit to Cleveland on Wednesday. The Colts and the Ravens have also shown interest in Clowney, that according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. I think most people right now expecting Clowney to sign with the Browns. Maybe he's got the Colts and Ravens as his backup, but how do you feel about Jadeveon Clowney in Cleveland? I know they're in the AFC, so we don't have to be worried about seeing them in the postseason, but they're a team that was kind of on the come up. You can't hate on the Browns if you're in Seattle, because they went further than you in the playoffs last year. How do you feel about Clowney with Cleveland?
Good for him. You put Myles Garrett over there. That defense has been solid. Their offense should really carry the most of the responsibility over there. But how crazy. Jadeveon Clowney, people still are really seeking after this guy. He's had two average seasons. You know, he's living off of what he did in Houston, which is good for him. I'll never hate on a football player getting his money. You go get it. Teams want you. Good for you. I just don't see him doing much for now on. I think that window's closed on him. He's had a bunch of injuries, but he's a nice guy to put in a rotation like we just talked about.
High-ceiling guys always trick people.
Yeah.
High-ceiling guys always get people to enter bidding wars or spend more than they normally should, and it doesn't matter if he has one, two, three seasons of lackluster production. A high-ceiling guy, when you have seen someone's ceiling as high as Clowney's has been, and I will add, that's not just with Houston, it's not just in college, against the San Francisco 49ers, the game in which he was injured, he had one of the most dominant games I've seen from a defensive end with Seattle, which has had some of the better defensive ends, particularly during its two Super Bowl trips. It was a phenomenal game. He took over it. It was the Jadeveon Clowney show. And this is at a time when you have Jimmy G still a star everyone's going to be looking at. Obviously, Russell Wilson. They have all these guys. It's a story. I think Josh Gordon was in that game. So there's all these other narratives there. And instead, Clowney comes in and dominates. High-ceiling guys will always be driving that interest. And I've got to be honest, my interest is still following it. I would not be mad at him signing with Seattle if it was on the cheap.
It's got to be for the cheap. And you're right. He has a game like that, and that's what we focus on. And then guys like me say, oh, well, what he does isn't going to show up on the stat sheet and just really just help his calls overall.
And you're not wrong. And you're not wrong. Zero sacks last year and still was written as one of the most sought-after defensive end free agents with a couple competing teams. Zero sacks.
Yeah.
Zero sacks last year. All right. Fox Sports' Jay Glazer reports that former Steelers running back James Conner will meet with the Cardinals today. Are you getting a little bit nervous about how the NFC West is shaping up, Bump? Because you have Matthew Stafford, overlooked, by the way, because the trade happened a while ago. Matthew Stafford taking over under center with the Rams. They're bringing in some other guys. You have the 49ers who are going to have a ton of talent plus a new quarterback plus everyone comes back healthier. And then the Cardinals that are basically throwing their money at free agency. How are you feeling?
I'm concerned, man. Everyone's moving out west.
I know.
On the Oregon Trail or something. Like, man, stay out of the NFC West. It's going to make it tough. I like seeing guys make moves, teams getting better. It's unfortunate when you have to play those teams two times. So if they are to get James Conner, good for them. But it's going – now we really need to get another D-lineman in there to help with the run game.
All right, end of an era in New England. The Patriots, this just breaking, have terminated the contract of wide receiver Julian Edelman due to a failed physical. That, according to NFL Network's Ian Rapoport.
Heck of a ride, Julian Edelman. What was he, 35 years old, 36? Mm-hmm. Made it cool for small guys to be in the slot. I mean, he's one of the pioneers in the slot position. Now, Wes Welker has been there, Hines Ward. You got to pay homage to the guys before. But the way the game is played now, guys like Wes Welker are getting drafted. You know, these were the guys that kind of made the team off the practice squad.
And it didn't used to happen.
Yeah, so, Julian, if this is the end for you, I appreciate you for representing for the slot guys.
Opening doors. And you know how I feel about my petites.
You think he goes to Tampa?
Why not?
Man. He's, like, best friends with Tom Brady.
Yeah, yeah.
Gronk's
Tom Brady
there.
Just going to bring back all former Patriots.
Get the band back.
Willie McGinnis, Teddy Bruschi.
Speaking of, not a former Patriot, but this is about a player joining the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Former Bengals running back Giovanni Bernard will sign with the Bucs on a one-year deal. That first reported by NFL Network's Tom Pelissero. How you feeling?
Giovanni, another guy. I want to say he was born in the 80s. Anybody born in the 80s, you're still playing ball.
Yes.
Hey, wherever you go, you got some support from your boy.
Always, always. That's what I always say about KJ Wright. And look, did KJ and me and a couple other guys have like just a couple months in the 80s? Yeah. But you know what? It was the best. It was the best time of my life, I can say. I didn't have to do anything. I didn't pay taxes. I didn't have a job. I just hung out and chilled and ate, and it was fantastic.
Oh.
And I'm holding it down.
He was born in 91. Giovanni.
90s, what? Baby.
No, 91.
Yes, he was.
Giovanni Bernard is 47 years old.
Right?
He was not born in 1991. This is a lie.
Not only was he not born in 1990, he wasn't even, like, you guys are 2 years off.
Wow.
He's not even close to the 80s.
We tried to claim him.
We tried.
Yeah. Shout out to my fellow 1991er.
Yeah. Oh, it's just sad. Does it make you sad that people born in 99 think you're really old? Like, you can't claim 90s babies in quite the same way. It's tough.
My sister-in-law, she turned 21 last year. And, like, we love her. She's family, obviously.
Right.
But every time I have, like, a conversation with her, it's just like, man, I
this is the worst.
I am washed. Like, I have nothing in common with you.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid of Gen Z. I'm afraid of talking about certain things. I'm like, I can't talk about Harry Potter. I can't talk about side parts.
Nope.
I can't talk about any slang, anything, because it's all old by now. It's all old, and I can't do that. What I'll say, I know it's going to happen. Eventually, we're going to all be watching the draft, and we're going to all be working together, and we're going to be looking at that Seahawks roster, and we're going to get it, and it's just going to have 01, 02, 01.
Oh, my goodness.
I bet guys in this year's draft class,
yes.
It's 2021,
yep.
Born in 2000.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right. A couple more stories here. The Good Morning Football recent mock draft has a surprise with the number 2 and number 3 pick. I don't foresee this happening. Tell me how shocked that both of you would be. The Jets shock the world and select Justin Fields over Zach Wilson at number 2 overall.
I wouldn't be shocked. No,
yeah?
I wouldn't. No, honestly, I would take Zach Wilson over Fields with the number 2 pick. I think Fields should be the next quarterback taken. But it's all about personality and fit and what they're going to ask him to do, how he interviewed, does he interact with the coaching staff a certain way. There's a lot more to it than football. Now, they got to be a baller, but there's some other intangibles that they look at.
All right. Yeah, I would be pretty shocked. I guess I'm just expecting Zach Wilson. I mean, they already have like magazines and paparazzi things in New York that are like, Zach's on Broadway. Like, I think Jets fans are already expecting Zach Wilson to be their quarterback. I don't even know what the reaction would be like. It would be shocked. I would be floored if it wasn't Zach Wilson. Not as floored as I would be, like, if the move that would shock me more than any move I can remember in recent memory would be Trevor Lawrence not going to the Jags at one overall.
Yeah.
Like, for the drama of it, that would be fascinating. But there's no way I would ever bet that that happens, ever in a million years.
Nah, that's not happening. Even though Fields is an Ohio State guy, Myers is down there.
Yeah.
But it ain't going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. All right. Now, we already know Sam Darnold is in Carolina after their quarterback trade to acquire him. He said recently in an article this around the NFL that he's excited for a fresh start in Carolina and that the wait and the uncertainty in New York drove him, quote, insane. How are we thinking his second wind is going to be in Carolina? Is he their guy of the future, or is he a guy that they're like, this is the best we can do right now? And so, because they didn't give up a first rounder for him.
Mm-hmm. He's both. He's the guy right now and the guy in the future if he balls out. He is a science project, because there's no denying the arm talent this dude has. Like, he can make every throw out there, but he turns the ball over. I think Matt Rhule is thinking, I'm going to give this guy a chance, but as soon as he slips, as soon as he feels like he's not progressing the way that he would like him to, then it's on to next. But he's the guy right now. He's the guy.
All right. Now, if we're looking at former first rounders, we've seen a lot of misses, right? We've seen sometimes a wide receiver gets taken too high. Maybe it's a defensive end, a cornerback, whatever it is. You always see misses in the NFL. 32 teams don't hit on 32 picks. And granted, 32 teams aren't always.
Most guys are misses in the NFL.
Most guys are misses in the NFL. We all know this. But what position might be the biggest first-round miss? More recently, the conversation has been about running backs. Mm-hmm. Seattle surprised a lot of people by taking a first running back in the first round. You've had a lot of analytics-minded folks pointing out, I think sometimes fairly, that spending second contracts on running backs can be incredibly risky. So that position group has taken a little bit of a hit in terms of first-round stock. But there's one position group in which it might be the riskiest, the biggest risk in the NFL draft. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right. Now, this conversation kind of started a little bit ago, but there's been a recent development. So let me walk you back through it. When the Rams traded Jared Goff to the Lions and the Lions sent Matt Stafford to the Rams, people were looking at all these teams around the league that had used a first round pick in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years on a quarterback. And there was this really fascinating stat that came out. So this was from February following this trade. And it's from Pro Football Focus, and they found, or excuse me, Pro Football Talk, and they found that of the 22 quarterbacks drafted in the first round between 2009 and 2016, none of them were with their original team. 22 quarterbacks taken in the first round, so don't point to like Russell Wilson or anything, taken in the first round from 2009 to 16, none of them were with their original team.
That just tells you that NFL teams, owners, organizations think that quarterbacks are the solution and the problem, right? You're always quick to get rid of a quarterback if your team isn't doing well. Or we got to go get another quarterback if we're trying to rebuild. Granted, they're the ones who touch the ball the most. Every single play they're touching the football, they have the most control. But it's a high-pressure job, man. And if you don't produce within 2 to 3 years, they're going to move on from you so quickly. Whereas a guy like Jadeveon Clowney can float around for 3, 4 years and do nothing and keep getting opportunities.
That's exactly right. And it's also the most expensive position, though, right? Like, it's why when you actually hit on a quarterback, like the Seahawks did with Russell Wilson, it becomes such a passionate conversation for so many people because they say, whoa, 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 wait a minute. Before you pull the trigger here and trade him away, think about what you're going to be getting in return and think whether you want to be one of these teams that uses a first round pick and misses on it, right? Yep. It's why Patriots fans were so mad at New England when they let Tom Brady go because they said, what if we don't get another one? Exactly. And it's why even in his early 40s, Tampa Bay fans were so ecstatic to get Tom Brady because they were like, we'll take 43-year-old Tom Brady over 24-year-old Sam Darnold any day of the week. Now, a couple of these guys are kind of obvious ones, right? But a couple of them have also, through injury or retirement, changed. For instance, I'll just go through the list. Mark Sanchez, you have Stafford, you have Josh Freeman, Tim Tebow, Sam Bradford, Cam Newton, Jake Locker, go Dogs, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder, RG3, Andrew Luck, Ryan Tannehill, Brandon Whedon, EJ Manuel, Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, one of the weirder stories from this group, Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Goff, Wentz, Paxton Lynch. I mean, holy Toledo. There were also three quarterbacks taken in the first round in 2017, and there's a chance that Patrick Mahomes is the only of those three that end with his original team for a couple years. You have Deshaun Watson with the Texans and Mitch Trubisky with Chicago. Trubisky already out, by the way, because this article is from February, so he's moving on. So now you got from 2017, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes as the only first-round quarterbacks with their original team, and one of them could be moving on.
Something tells me Deshaun ain't going to be there too much longer.
I don't think so either.
There we go.
Do you think there's a problem with the way we evaluate quarterbacks?
Yes, I think there is. I think that we kind of jump on the bandwagon of quarterbacks. If there's a big name in this media game, the Mel Kuypers, the McShays, all those guys with the big voices, if they say this guy is the next so-and-so, we're like, okay, he's the next guy. Let's don't even look at his film. Let's just look at his stats and go with what these guys are saying, because it's such a flawed process, this NFL draft, combine, all of this. It's so flawed because you have, 120-plus D1 football teams.
Mm-hmm.
It means you have 120-plus starting quarterbacks, and we've conditioned ourselves to say SEC is the best football league, and then you can go to the one of the bigs and then the pack. And we've conditioned ourselves to go through this certain type of process that makes guys like Trey Lance not attractive, because we're like, whoa, who'd he play against? You know, he's not in the SEC.
He's not in North Dakota State.
Well, really, this guy could be the best quarterback out there.
Yep.
So we're kind of sheep when it comes to that. We listen to the big dogs talk, and then we go off of what they think.
Now, I mentioned that there was a new development from it, and that's new sound. This from ESPN's Jeremy Schapp, Cut 10.
I mean, seriously, is Zach Wilson really better than Sam Darnold? Who knows? Maybe he's the next Johnny Unitas. Maybe he's the next Geno Smith. In 2017, the Bears traded four picks to move up one spot to draft Mitchell Trubisky at second overall. They could have kept all those picks and taken Patrick Mahomes with room to spare. He went 10th. With the exception of the rare, very rare, almost impossibly rare sure thing, a la John Elway or Peyton Manning, you're probably better off using that top pick on an offensive lineman or linebacker. Late in the first round, after all, you can get an Aaron Rodgers. Or in the second, a Drew Brees. Or if you wait all the way until the sixth, Tom Brady. In the last 50 NFL drafts, 44 quarterbacks have been selected first, second, or third overall. And exactly two have gone on to win Super Bowls as the starters for the teams that drafted them. Troy Aikman and Peyton Manning.
Now, I'll say this about Jeremy Schapp's point. I actually do think it's exceptionally harder to find talent late in the rounds, like at quarterback.
Yeah.
I understand that people will point to Tom Brady in the sixth round, but if you tell me the Hall of Famers from the first round versus the sixth round, I will tell you there is a difference. Like, it is easier to find more sure talent, particularly at quarterback, in the first round. Jeremy's overall point, though, that we often overvaluate that talent, and your point that we get into an echo chamber and just kind of have this like group think when it comes to quarterbacks, is also absolutely right and fair.
But who would you say is the most important player in a football team?
It's quarterback.
That's why we do it.
Yep.
It's because we're looking for that instant satisfaction, the guy who's going to take this team to the next level. And you've seen that if you do not have good quarterback play, you're probably not going to win a lot of football games. So you roll the dice more. And then quarterbacks don't get the opportunities that other positions get to be starters. Now, a quarterback can be drafted early, kind of fizzle out and be a backup the rest of his career. But you have guys like, we just got rid of Jermaine Ifedi, mm-hmm. right? We didn't want him. Someone else wanted him. He's starting. Boom, he's moving on. It's so much harder to sustain success as a quarterback in this league. And as soon as teams see any kind of downfall, man, they're so quick to get the next best thing or what they think is the next best thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. I could keep talking about this for ages. Unfortunately, we have to jump into what I need to know. That's around the corner, but here's how it works. You are going to text your question, any question, multiple questions you have about anything. It can be something we talked about today. It could be something we didn't talk about today. It could be personal. It could be sports. Whatever it is, advice, I like to think I give good advice. Text it in, 710-710, what I need to know. That's right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by Allred Heating, Cooling, Electric. Now, first question is not actually one that was texted in. It's one that got me into a fight the other day on Saturday. And it's one we talked about in the sports pit. I'm going to tell you guys about it again, once again, so that the listeners can have their chance to sound off. And here's the question. Is a maple bar a donut?
Definitely a donut.
Thank you.
It is a donut.
Yeah, what other shop are you going to buy it at?
Exactly.
The
maple bar
shop.
Store? No. Mike Lefko, who you guys are going to... here in like 10 seconds, I mean, not really 10 seconds, but he's the producer for Wyman and Bob, which comes up after us. They'll be there at the top of the hour. He claims that the maple bar is not a donut for two reasons. One, it's not round. Two, because, yeah, is that Mike back there?
It is.
Yeah, we're talking about a maple bar being a donut. One, because it's not round. And two, because you call it a maple bar and not a maple bar donut. Ridiculous arguments. Absolutely absurd.
By that
Don't
logic,
let him take the mic from you, Curtis.
By that logic, a bagel is a donut.
Thank you.
And that's not true at all.
So bad. It's an awful, awful opinion. And I'll say it to your fake face, Mike. All right. Now, this is a real question from the 253. How long until the M's make the playoffs?
3 years.
Three?
Yeah.
To make the playoffs.
I take that back. I'm not gonna, this year, they're not doing it. Next year, they're not doing it. 3 years. Not this year, not next year, year after.
I'm going to say next year, 2022.
Yeah, I think next year is fair. 3 years out, I feel good about it, Bump, where I'm like, they have great talent where their top prospects will have like a year under their belt, will have 2 years under their belt, maybe. Next year is when I'm like, I'm looking around at the rest of the AL West, and I'm thinking, you've got a shot.
I think they'll be in the hunt next year.
Yes.
Yeah, they'll be in the hunt.
There's a couple people agreeing with Lefko, and it's really hurting my feelings. From the 509, hot or mild salsa?
Hot all day.
Hot.
All day.
My wife is Mexican, so it's hot.
So you're like,
spicy.
But there is no choice.
Everything.
Mild salsa is not an option. from the 509, another 509. What's the chance the Hawks still trade Bobby Wagner for draft picks, and what would they get in return?
Bobby ain't going nowhere.
No.
They ain't trading Bobby. Nope, not happening.
No, I remember doing an article on 710sports.com where it was based on a conversation we had about, like, do you think that the Seahawks are going to stick with three picks, and how would they get more? Would they do a Frank Clark-like trade? Like, would they trade a guy that would get them a first-rounder and more ahead of the draft? And I was thinking, like, there's no one they have that's quite like Frank Clark. Frank Clark was a guy that they may not have been able to afford, that they franchise tagged,
mm-hmm.
and it made it easier to trade. There was a team that needed him, and it gave the Seahawks two first-round picks. They had one already, and then the one they got from Kansas City. They don't have anyone like that this year. Bobby's in a long-term deal, and you need him on defense. Russ is in a long-term deal, and you obviously need him on offense. DK would net you a lot. Why on earth would you trade him? You just extended Tyler Lockett. You don't have a Frank Clark this year.
Nope, not available. Don't have him.
This person says maple bars are made with dough, donut dough, therefore are a donut. Thank you so much. Let's see. I just saw one that just missed it. Will the Seahawks... Okay, from the 206. I'm going to add a question onto it. Will the Seahawks be able to sign Edelman, and should they?
I think they will be able to, and I think they should. This is what the Seahawks do, right? They find guys that people think are too old, maybe in a Carlos Dunlap or are moving on from, and they come here and they help us out. So I would appreciate that pick, honestly. I think that Freddie Swain could still be the guy and should be the guy they're looking at. But if you can get a 35-year-old baller in the slot for the low, go ahead and get him.
What I need to know, what's a go-to midnight snack?
Oh, mine is peanut butter and jelly.
A peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Yep.
I just don't like that much effort.
It takes like 30 seconds.
It's a midnight snack. Then you have to wash the knife, and then you got to, like, when you cut it, you're like, do I cut it on a napkin and use that as my plate, or do I get an actual plate? I don't know, Bump. That's a lot of work.
You just made that process really complicated.
If I want a midnight snack, I want to open a box, eat, and then put the box away.
I feel that.
Yeah, thank you. Curtis, wait, what's yours?
Cold pizza, probably number one. Number two, maybe like cookies or brownies, something like that. Like you said, you open the tray,
yeah,
or the
and
tin
it's done.
Up,
and you're good.
It's like, all right, pop a couple in, head back to bed.
This could be a fun one. What I need to know from the 425, have you ever told a fib to get out of doing something you didn't want to do with a good friend?
Oh, we all have. Who hasn't?
Ooh, have we all, Bob?
Yes, we
what
have.
What was the fib you told to get out of something?
You know what? I hate moving. Like, moving,
everyone,
I cannot
yeah.
stand it. I have a pickup truck. I got a Ford F-150. So, you know, homie asked me, hey, are you busy? And I became busy.
I have a dentist appointment. He's like, I haven't told you the time.
That's going to be one of the... I got to be honest, like, I'm a homebody. I love staying at home. Yeah. And so when friends ask me to go do something like late at night, it's like, I don't think so. And with COVID being what it is over the last year, you could always use that as an excuse. When that goes away, you don't have that excuse anymore of like, oh man, pandemic, I can't go out. Like, you kidding me?
Hey, you will soon.
I know.
You got kids,
got
man.
Got kids.
Wife and kids, man.
Got a baby. Can't do anything.
Baby's asleep. You guys have a babysitter and you're like, no, we're hanging out.
We can't.
But you know what? I used to, I'll fib if it's something where it would be absurd for me to lie about doing it. But I have started to lie less as I've gotten older. Where I'll just say, like, hey, I got to be honest, I'm tired.
Yeah.
So it used to be like, oh my gosh, I can't. I'm at my sister's birthday party.
Brian's got something going
on. Exactly. My boyfriend, Brian.
Her very real boyfriend.
He is real.
Astronaut Brian.
Yeah, that's his job. And then you had to keep track of the lies. Like, they'd be like, how was the party? And you couldn't be like, what party? Oh, shoot. So now I've just started, unless it's something where... Like, you're like with your friend, you're like, I have to lie. I can't just say I'm tired. I have to lie. If it's like friends that are out and they invite you to come out, I've started to be okay with just saying, like, I'm comfortable. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm good. Someone pointed out Paul Gallant dislikes grilled cheese sandwiches. What are your thoughts about it?
Grilled cheese sandwiches are delicious. I low key. That was my go-to when my mom needed to make something quick for me. I would ask her to make her grilled cheese sandwiches. Something about the way she does it. I don't know exactly what she does. I don't even want to know. I just want her to continue to make them for me.
Someone's giving us lying advice from the 253. That's why you ask, oh, yeah, sure, what time? And then when they say the time, you say, I can't. I can't do it that time. Okay. So then you get the clout of being a good friend and being like, absolutely, I'm down to hang out anytime. And then they tell you it's 6 p.m. and you're like, oh, man, anytime but 6 would have been great, but I can't do that. Just some advice. Yeah. General advice.
Good to know. Good to know.
Speaking of pizza, wow. Do you leave leftovers on the counter or in the fridge? Who leaves it on the counter?
I leave it on the counter for
what?
At least an hour.
I don't leave it on the
but
counter overnight.
But that's some, like, college behavior,
that's
leaving it overnight
absurd.
On the counter.
Yeah.
Put it in the fridge. Be an adult.
You leave that pizza on the counter, it's going to cut up your mouth the next day. Don't leave that pizza on the counter. Come on. I'm exceptionally lazy. I still put it in the fridge.
I can't believe you wash your knife after peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Like, that's part of your process?
I guess it's just you just want to get it out of the way.
Okay.
You know? Clearly, I'm doing this wrong. All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Michael Bumpus, going to be in with us this week for Jake Heaps. Curtis Rogers on the board. I'm Stacey Rost. We will be back tomorrow for another Jake and Stacey, and you guys are going to have Wyman and Bump joining you next before some baseball, some day baseball. Mariners opening their series against the Baltimore Orioles. That all coming up next following Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.